Okay, good evening all. Thanks so much for coming. Welcome to this overview scrutiny group meeting of the 14th of January. I'm required to read a notice to you about filming and recording. Please note this meeting will be recorded and sound recording subsequently made available via the Council's website. In addition, please be advised that under the Openness and Local Government Bodies Regulation 2014, other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any image or sound recordings is not under the Council's control. If you have any queries about these arrangements, please speak to the Democratic Services Office who is administering the meeting. Thank you. Apologies, do we have any apologies?
No apologies,
no?
Chair.
If we haven't got apologies, we have a full house, so we must have a quorum. Excellent. The minutes of the previous meeting, I've read the minutes, but one thing lacking, I wasn't there. So if anybody else is prepared to vouch, so Matthew, you propose it, Sue, you second it.
Yeah.
Everybody in agreement with the meeting?
Yeah.
Yes, that's excellent. So. We have disclosure of pecuniary and personal interests.
I have a personal one in item 6A, the pitches and open spaces. My son-in-law manages Loughborough Dynamos. It's only personal. Okay, so I'm just making everybody aware.
Okay. Matt?
Thank you, Chair. I have a personal interest in item 6A as a tenant of a house association.
Okay, thank you. Declarations of party whip. Anybody subject to a whip? No? Okay. Questions under scrutiny committee procedures?
No questions.
Right.
Chair.
So we'll move on to the main meeting. Item one, that is to consider the strategy report from the head of cleansing and open spaces. And I'd like to call upon the lead member to introduce the.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
So, the open space strategy for review this evening. So, before you today is the strategy for the management of open spaces in the Borough of Charnwood. It provides a review of 2013 open spaces strategy and the current action plan based on an up-to-date assessment of provision, user consultation and local needs analysis. It aims to provide a clear framework for practical action to protect and improve open spaces. It will guide prioritisation, management and resource allocation for the improvement of open spaces in the borough, and it will deliver good practice in all aspects of provision. It will also exploit opportunities to increase the provision of open space and support bids for funding to improve the network of open space to meet current and future demands in the borough. The strategy and policies will ensure the Council's commitment to high-quality open spaces. It is fully integrated into its strategies, plans and programmes by influencing and informing policy development and implementation across the Council's activities. The strategy is evidence-based and it's very thorough in its creation, and each section is detailed with an executive summary and has action plans. Should Cabinet choose to support the Open Space Strategy on Thursday, the strategy will run from current to 2036. The strategy encompasses three components, that's overall open spaces, playing pitch strategy and indoor built facilities. The Council's corporate plan 2016 to 2020 its aims to encourage a healthy lifestyle for all our residents through physical activity programmes and the provision of sports facilities and its green spaces. These strategies will build on and protect existing facilities and ensure that accessibility to green spaces and sports infrastructure is maintained as the borough develops. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Councillor. Matt, do you want to?
Thank you. If I could just to add, so before you this evening, you've got three studies and three strategies there. As Councillor Harper Davies said, you've got the open spaces strategy that looks at parks, gardens, children's play equipment, allotments and other green spaces. You've got a playing pitch study and strategy that looks at outdoor sports like football, cricket and rugby union and assesses our current provision alongside future needs. And you've got the indoor built facilities study and strategy there as well. It's important to say that we commissioned the studies and the strategies, but they are studies, strategies and action plans that are relevant for the whole borough, not just to the council. There are a lot of providers of these types of facilities throughout the borough, so it isn't just a strategy for us. We've worked with a lot of other organisations to put these together, so some of the actions that are there are sort of owners and landlords of these facilities are sit with us, and some sit with third parties like sports clubs, parish councils and other organisations. I think that's probably all I'd like to add. Sylvia's here to accompany me because she's the lead on the indoor built facilities part of the strategy, so if you have any questions we'd hope to answer them between us.
Thank you very much indeed. Anybody got any questions they'd like to lead off with?
I'll kick off then. Councillor Andrew Palin. Matt, going forward, obviously with new developments, we're seeing a lot of now managed green spaces, etc. As a council, do we feel comfortable in terms of how they're being managed in line with some of the residents' complaints that I've had in my ward regarding costs?
It's true to say that a lot of new developments, the open spaces aren't being adopted by the council, the developers aren't paying commuted sums, and they're being managed by management or not-for-profit management organisations, and I think that will continue into the future. We've certainly got quite a few substantial developments happening, and that is the way that they are going. At the minute, I would say that there doesn't appear to be an issue with the quality of what's happening at provision there, but I think we're at the start of the journey, if I'm honest, and we'll look to see what happens going forward. We are scrutinising the management plans that these organisations put to us as part of their planning permission, and we're quite confident at the start that those management arrangements that are being put in place are sufficient for the open spaces to take to be managed going into the future. I think it's a bone of contention amongst some residents that they pay a management fee when they buy their house. They are made aware of it through the conveyancing process, and that is there to ensure that those open spaces are managed and secured going forwards.
When we decided to have a look at this item, the main concern was to look to see if there were any intentions to cut facilities or get rid of things. And I must say, with all the reading I've done of it, I haven't been able to find anything. But in the page 5, I'll read it out to you. Page 4, it says financial implications. It is anticipated that the funding of the projects identified in the action plans will be provided by a combination of external organisations, including parish and town councils, sports governing bodies and developers. Do we have any real expectation of that? Is that those funds secure?
I don't think those funds are secure at present. I think the strategy sets a direction for the borough, not just the council, for those providers of open space pitches and indoor sports. So right. I think what our hopes are for the strategies are that they'll be our evidence base to draw some of that funding down. I think a lot of that funding will come from developers as the borough grows in population. It gives us quite a sound evidence base to ask developers for Section 106 contributions to provide some of these facilities going forwards. And it also will enable us to work with the sports governing bodies to realise some of their national funding that they may have in place for pitch improvements. So it isn't secured, but I think this is the starting place to get those funds secured. And I think we have to remember as well that this is a strategy that goes to 2036. Yeah. So it does have quite a long life cycle. I'm working with the FA at the moment on a football facilities plan, so
yes.
We'd hope that now that we've got the strategy that we'd have a good evidence base to make some improvements in football, and those that are highlighted within the document, and that's where we are.
Thank you. Chris?
Yeah, just to add as well that there are resources committed to the strategy, so there's already some identified in the capital plan, which is in the region of about half a million.
Yes.
So that's already identified. Okay. That's Charnwood's resource. I don't want you going away with the impression that there's no resource. There is. Also, and some of the commitment is already identified through the SUEs around some of the open spaces. But in addition, Matt's quite right about how we work in partnership with our other providers. So in terms of some of the facilities, indoor built facilities, we already have existing leisure providers that we work very closely with in our existing contracts about how we invest in those leisure facilities. And going forward, Matt's obviously alluded to the FA, but there's also Sport England that we have a very good relationship with and work with them to help to plan for the future. So it is intended, the strategies are all intended as a platform to give us the detail to be able to aspire and to bid alongside other organisations. This is some of the parts, effectively.
So the expectations are realistic?
Yeah.
Good. Thank you very much.
Can I ask just one question? You know that you mentioned, Matt, they borrow 6 million.
Yes.
So how do villages or parish councils or people access that knowledge of that money is available? How can parish clerks, are they notified or are they?
Parish clerks are
notified
that 106 monies are available. I think what we do with the planning department is that there is a planning liaison,
yeah,
officer that works within my mm-hmm. team, and they will assess the needs that have arisen as a result of a particular development, looking at the open spaces strategy, the playing pitch strategy, and the indoor mm-hmm. built facilities
yeah.
strategy, and come up with a sort of a template, if you like, of,
yeah.
of what we think we need from that particular development,
yes,
to meet the community's requirements, and that is shared with parish councils, and there is some dialogue
mm-hmm.
there with regard to that.
Yeah, so they can actually inquire. I'd hate that money to go back to the developers, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
we've
got quite a robust process in place to ensure that doesn't happen.
Okay, thank you.
Anybody else? Anything else? No,
Okay. Just reading on this, Matt, it says a priority sports. Is that based on like the assessment that's done? Because I noticed, obviously, you're working with the FA.
Yes.
Are you working with any other sports as well at the moment?
We'll work with all sports governing bodies.
Mm-hmm.
The reason that we're working with the FA at the moment is they've just announced some Football Foundation funding, and they have quite a substantial pot of money to invest in grassroots football. So they're at the start of a big funding cycle, and they're looking to work with local councils and other football pitch providers
mm-hmm.
to invest and improve their grassroots offering. So it's just that they were the first people to the table, but we're working with all the governing bodies to assess their needs and work with them as well. That was just one example that's
mm-hmm.
quite current, really.
Okay.
Good. Matthew's just actually answered the question.
Okay, thank you. Now, I don't know if anybody's seen this document. We had an email today from County Councillor Max Hunt, who has obviously read this, and as he made a couple of points, if I'd like to read the points of view, some brief comments about them. Point one, the current strategy said the council will reduce its financial liability by actively promoting the transfer to third-party organisations, e.g. parish and town councils, managing bodies or trusts. This has been replaced by saying that the borough would work to agree the adoption of open space created as part of the new development in the borough. Does that mean anything to you?
I think the previous strategy, it did hint, although it wasn't a sort of concrete commitment, that we would not look to adopt open spaces, and we would look for developers to take that responsibility on for setting up the management company, and obviously then, as we talked about earlier, there would be a service charge that was levied on on residents. I think the new open spaces strategy takes a slightly softer line with regard to that and leaves it quite open. I'd say the issue of adoption by the council of open spaces is largely led by the developer's willingness to pay what we call a commuted sum.
Yes.
We ask for a 25-year maintenance fee for any open space that we adopt that covers the maintenance of that area for that period of time, and then that feeds into the council's budget.
Yeah.
At the end of that period, the liability then falls upon the general council taxpayer. A lot of developers at the moment are reluctant to pay that commuted sum, and therefore we wouldn't take that open space and alternative arrangements are made. So I think that just the open spaces, the new open spaces strategy, just takes a slightly softer line, leaves it open, but there are no. It depends on each negotiation with each developer.
See, he answered most of his point too when he's really saying, is land up for adoption any longer? And he's questioning maybe not enough is up for adoption, but you just explained it's probably due to the charge we want 25 years ago.
Yes, I think we are open to adopting new open spaces, pitches, and facilities, play facilities, if the developer will meet the commuted sum requirements. Obviously, there's a lot of open space being generated through the development, and it's probably not financially viable for us to reduce that sort of commuted sum that we ask for.
Okay. His third point, he says, the future provision of play and open space in the borough will clearly depend very largely on private provision, planning agreements and enforcement. This is not acknowledged, and there's little strategy to guide the authority in this entirely new environment.
This is the strategy that we've set for our open spaces and our play provision throughout the borough.
Yeah.
It's done in accordance with national standards, the Fields and Trust standards. It sets standards for quality, quantity, and accessibility, and it plans these things out in a way that's commonly accepted amongst borough councils. There is a pretty consistent way of doing this, so I don't think I probably agree with that statement, if I'm honest.
Okay. The other one, he says, the strategy is a missed opportunity, and so such significance that it would have benefited from a proper public consultation. Well, I understand that there was a consultation, was there not?
There was a very detailed consultation with members of the public, members, parish councils, sports bodies, Sport England. That was promoted through the council's normal channels, press releases, through social media. So there was quite an extensive consultation when this was put together as part of the development of the strategy. So again, I think maybe someone missed that consultation, but it certainly was. There was some very detailed consultation that took place.
Okay.
It's probably worth mentioning that it was used in the national guidance.
Yes.
So the actual consultation followed all of the national guidance, you know, to make sure that it was done in the correct way.
Okay, thank you very much. Chris?
Thank you, Chair. Just to add as well, I think it's important. We really see these strategies as living, breathing documents and the action plans that arise from them. So, yes, the initial consultation has been completed, but the ongoing action plans are meant to include communities and partners and other organisations that we work with, including other councils. So that has to be part of the process, and we all respect that and think that the sweeter strategy should, for example, help and continue to inform the local plan and other strategies that the council adopts. So it starts here, but it doesn't end here, if that helps.
Thank you very much. Anybody have any more comments? Okay, that's really good. Happy about that. We're considering the strategy of the report. We've considered a strategy report that you described to us, and I think we've got to make a recommendation to Cabinet. Personally, I'm quite satisfied that the what I can see is the structure is in, it's in good condition. My fears of cuts haven't materialised, and you've managed to answer all the questions that have been put to us. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So the committee have to agree those three recommendations?
Right. Three recommendations.
Yeah.
Yes, yeah. Recommended.
Do you want a proposal? One second.
No, it's okay, as
long as we're really agreeing. Where are we going now? I'm on that. There's a Look at that, that comes up on page 11.
Okay, if we come to item 2 is to consider a report from the Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing regarding the introduction of discretionary licensing scheme. So could I call upon the lead member to introduce it, please?
Yes, thank you. Good evening, members. Thank you for inviting me this evening. I was coming tonight to actually request a change to one of the recommendations. I have been told that I can only do it at Cabinet. However, I would like to tell you what I was going to ask for, because I think it's important for what might come out and what I'm going to be saying in the report. So, unfortunately, I didn't get the report until 4 p.m. on Friday because of various problems, notably my computer, which is why I'm the only one with a paper copy. But we won't go there tonight. I would also, before we start, like to congratulate Alison, because she's worked very hard and has managed to get a £65,000 grant to take this forward. So I can't tell you how pleased we are that that's happened. However, having said that, I still have concerns about the wording. So I would have been requesting that recommendation 2 would have read, Cabinet agreed to investigate the possibility of the introduction of an additional or selective licensing scheme, and that I will be taking to Cabinet on Thursday. However, moving on to the reasons and the background of, in part, why we're here tonight, for those of you that are new to the Council, well, I'm new in the last 5 years or so, is new. To date, we've had 2 scrutiny panels looking at the issues relating to the impact of student occupancy. In total, 22 recommendations came out of those 2 panels. 15 of these were from the panel reported in 2014, and it's sometimes talked about as 2015 by the time it had gone to Cabinet. The panel was formed at the request of residence groups because they were providing information that was different to the evidence that was supplied by our planning department, and that's how the second scrutiny panel arose. In 2015, Cabinet agreed that Professor Smith and a PhD student would be contracted to undertake a 3-year analysis of HMOs and student occupancy. The final statistical analysis was available to officers in April 2018, and the written report was presented in December 2018. This will inform our course strategy and is now available on our website, a really important document. If you have read the 33 pages, you will appreciate why so many councillors are now concerned. The professor's report is recognised as being one of national importance, as it has provided an unprecedented in-depth study, the first of its kind in the UK in any town or city. The report identifies not only where 2,509 HMOs are located, it more importantly, I think, identifies 1,653 HMOs which were not previously recorded. His report clearly states on page 26, 4.1.1, that to continue to conceptualise Loughborough's HMO market solely as a student housing market is outdated, given the identification of diverse and non-student HMO markets that are now across the town and also other towns and villages across the borough. Professor Smith's report, and I think this is why I'm so concerned that we look at it in a wider point, has clearly identified and highlighted that while students make up 52% of the rental market, approximately 46% is made up of non-students, and increasingly a number of landlords are using the spare capacity within houses to rent out a room to another. He clearly identified 8 diverse and potentially vulnerable groups, and importantly where they are in the borough. So it does put a slightly different slant onto what was originally thought to be student occupancy. The 2016 Housing Act, I don't know if how many of you are familiar with it, because we talk a lot about the 2004 Act, but it has been, additional powers have been introduced. The 2016 Housing Act gave landlords with HMOs that had 5 or more occupants until the 1st of October 2018 to apply for their mandatory licence. So the government has already recognised the need to build on what they did in 2004. I believe it was 288 that Professor Smith had identified, and I think the private rented sector sent out letters to possibly 197, but Alison will probably remember better than me. So even working on 200 applying for a new licence at £610, or even £500 if they've gone through the DASH accreditation, that alone should have provided £122,000, which over a 5-year licence would be £24,400. The point I'm trying to make is that it is designed to be self-financing. It's not, you can't make a profit, but the scheme has to be self-financing. So in addition, we also have a number coming through that have to be re-licensed. So we're not talking about an insignificant sum of money, and I certainly, it needs officers to do the work, and we are under-resourced for the amount of work that has been achieved. I'm going to leave it there because I'm sure you've got many questions. There are other points I do want to make, though, but you may well ask and identify them, so I don't want to carry on talking too much when it's your committee.
Shall we ask Alison to give her report before we ask the question?
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chair. So the purpose of the report, as Councillor Smith has already said, is to provide an update on the decisions made by Cabinet in 2015, one which was to consider the introduction of discretionary houses in multiple occupation licensing scheme, and the second was to progress the implementation of a Loughborough accreditation standard with the Students' Union.
So the report today sets out the types of licences, so that's pages 4 to 5. It also sets out on page 5 the concerns raised by councillors in relation to houses in multiple occupation, the number of HMOs in the borough and the number licensed, and obviously that number is increasing as we process the expansion of the mandatory licensing as we go forward. I think we're up to 426 to date, which is higher than when I wrote the report. Page 6 details all the complaints that the council has received over the last 5 years and how they've been dealt with. And what we're also explaining through that is how each service deals with the complaints and what enforcement policies they have in place and the legislation they can use to deal with them. Page 7 goes through the student advisory service. When I'm talking about this, I'm talking about page 7 of my report, not the page numbers at the bottom. Sorry. So page 9 goes through the council and service enforcement policies and the legislation that we can use. And then page 12 goes through the drivers where additional and selective licences have been implemented by other local authorities and the reasons they've put them in place. One of the things that must be understood is that the licence fee purely covers the administration of the licence and the issue of the licence. It doesn't cover any enforcement action over and above. So that is where it's just the officer's time to complete the process they need to go through, checking they've got all the necessary documents and carry out one inspection within the 5 year period. Just to clarify that aspect. Page 12 explains, as I've said, about the additional selective licensing and the process you have to go through. And I think this is important in relation to the evidence that we've gained to date. In relation to additional licensing, now I have to read this because I always get this round the wrong way because this is what's come out in the case law, it's where the council has to believe that a significant proportion of the HMOs in the area are being managed sufficiently ineffectively as to give rise to or be likely to give rise to problems for the occupants or members of the public. So that is what came out from a judge, and you could interpret that one way or the other. But when you look at the results from the complaints that I've included in here, our complaints, and I know Councillor Sinovich doesn't necessarily agree with what's with the percentage of complaints, but that doesn't show that we've got a significant problem. I'm not saying we haven't, but from the evidence that we currently have, it doesn't give us enough evidence to actually bring a scheme forward. So on page, and then selective licensing, this again is even more complicated as to the reasons why you're introducing it, and an area that has to have a significant amount of private rented sector with people on assured tenancies or licences to occupy. So it explains all the way through, and there's a lot of detail in here, so I'll expect some questions, but I won't go into any more detail currently. And then page 16, obviously I've done my conclusion in relation to the evidence I've been able to gather across the services. And from the evidence I've got, there is insufficient evidence to implement a scheme as it currently stands, which is why I put in the bid for the Rogue Landlords Enforcement Grant so that we can carry out further research. And that's not just for introducing a discretionary scheme, it's also to inform the local plan, because 50,000 of this would be for us to do the investigations from the housing perspective, and 15,000 of that is for planning to do their work in relation to the development of the local plan and reviewing policies. And then the last part of the report is to do with the housing accreditation, which we did meet on a number of occasions with the student union, the university, etc. And at the last meeting, as detailed in the report, the student union advised they no longer have the resources to take that forward, so that is no longer on the table. So we will continue to work with DASH, which is a decent and safe homes accreditation scheme we currently have. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Yes. Anybody, any questions? Would you like to start, Julie?
Okay, I'll start. Thanks for that, both of you. I was on the original HMO committee from quite a few years ago. I'm a bit puzzled, because it's obviously been ongoing, about the lack of evidence. And I don't know what more evidence that we actually need. You may correct me. I think from memory, from what I've read, that is it about 60 councils already have this licensing scheme? And I'm just wondering what we need to do to... You say about evidence. I mean, I feel that we've kind of got a lot of evidence as we have at the moment. That's my personal opinion.
it's the percentage of the complaints associated with the remainder of the households within the area. And when you look at a number of the schemes that have been introduced, we're looking at below 20% for the number of HMOs that have been complained about, and that's 15% when majority of the schemes that have been taken forward have had complaints of up to 45%. So when you're looking at that, and the other aspect as well, it's not only with the percentage, it's the actions that we currently take within the legislation and working with the student university and student union to deal with the complaints as they're received.
Well, I know from other matters as well that people don't always report things, so I'm just wondering about the evidence that we are missing from it, to be quite honest with you. I mean, like, I know on my ward, there's lots of people and they don't always report. I'm not saying I agree with that, because I always tell them to do so. But there is a lot, I mean, I just personally feel there's a lot of evidence out there to have something like this. I appreciate you going on about the percentages, but percentages aren't always, in my opinion, a good indicator of what's going on and what's needed.
I can only use the evidence that is formally recorded. I can't use evidence that I haven't received or hasn't been recorded in either through the council and the different services across the council or with the student advisory services that have also been logging the complaints.
Councillor Smith, do you have anything to say?
Well, after the termination of the first scrutiny panel, the second scrutiny panel that I've written the scoping document for, I started to work quite closely with the university and the students' union. They were very keen that they were paid for doing per room, and I didn't feel that was appropriate at all, but they're the ones that are living in the places, so we would always have welcomed their views, but not to pay them to do the job because they can't enforce. I do take an issue with the evidence, and it's that word evidence that I think Alison and I tend to disagree, but only because of different reasons. Quite understandably, Alison can only go by the evidence that's written, people have actually formally written in and complained, but you're quite right, there is under reporting. But I think one of the surprises I had when we had a pre-briefing was that on my page 13, I'm assuming your page 13, for example, 2017 and 2018, we have untidy gardens, one complaint, and zero for side waste bins. Well, I was quite surprised at zero, because just what I have done as one individual, going out in the car and taking photographs when I've seen things, I counted up the photographs I have with the dates. I have sent those quite a few of them to Alison, and I had reported them to different divisions in the council, and my total for the year was 39, and that's me alone. And why I made reference as well to the point at the beginning about the whole panel arose because of the differences of opinion and evidence that was coming to planning, it was because the evidence was different. So the panel and Professor Smith was the one way forward. And we, you know, there are 1,653 that were totally unknown. The students are actually, I think, coming out with a slightly better deal, but not all of them complained to the university. And, you know, my case studies that I'm meeting students have sort of told me that. The recent printout I've taken, which magazine did a very good article, I've currently got a list of 65 councils with different things in, different approaches, whether it's selective or additional. But where I've come from and why I'm pushing so hard is that the Housing Act in 2004, which was a key act, was that Section 239 gave powers of entry to inspect its stock, and there were 5 points: to survey and examine if Category 1 hazards exist. Well, you won't know whether there's a Category 1 hazard unless you actually go into the property and have a look. and many people who are vulnerable will not be the ones wanting you to go in and look at their properties. So Professor Smith's identified 8 different groups, and he actually outlines in his report online, available for everybody to see, that there are vulnerable portions. We don't have to go to a magistrate's court to get a warrant to go in. We can knock on a door, and it had in heavy print, 24 hours notice is required, except to inspect whether a property is operating as an HMO.
Yeah, I see actually on page 25, the actual bid of 65,000 has been made for the actual landlord enforcement grant.
Yeah.
Alison, can you tell me where that's going to be delegated to, or how it's going to be used, if possible?
£15,000 will be used for the work that's been undertaken by planning to inform the development of the local plan preparation. And also that will obviously link in as well with the possible implementation of additional selective licensing scheme. And the other £50,000 will be used to go through and visit the properties of some of the properties that Professor Smith has highlighted in that 1600 of the most problematic areas or deprived areas. And in addition, there was 108 that were on our gazetteer, but Professor Smith didn't pick up. So that again concerns me, because they should have been on both. So that will be another area that will be looked at. We won't necessarily be able to deliver to visit all of them, so we'll be picking specific areas, because although we know there's additional HMOs, what we don't know is that they're not being managed sufficiently and effectively, and that's what we need to establish.
So are you going to utilise the remaining £50,000 for an extra officer or a part-time officer to actually try and implement that, or what?
Well, I think it'll be probably, we have to spend this money by the end of March.
Yes,
so we'll
another big criteria. That's
a number of consultants in to go out and agree a questionnaire and go out and start questioning particular areas that we've highlighted.
So you'll have to engage another staff then on
yes.
that. Thank you.
Councillor Andrew Palin, thanks for answering that question. Based on the 50,000 that you're going to spend in terms of consultation to gather this evidence, once that evidence has been gathered, what resources then do we have to implement the changes that's been identified?
In relation to additional selective licensing
yes.
scheme. Once we've got the evidence, then we'll look at whether the evidence gives us the justification to implement either scheme. We'll work up a licence fee that would then cover the resources required to implement it, but that will, as I said previously, only administer the licence and carry out one inspection in the five-year
period. Yeah, I did read that, yeah.
Yeah. The enforcement action is still not covered.
Yeah, because that's an additional,
additional cost.
Thing.
I'm a bit concerned that it all seems to revolve around complaints, and if it all revolves around complaints, it really means that if nobody complains, we have to assume that it's all okay. And there seems to be, I don't know, I'm not involved in housing, but you know, I have heard a lot of sort of complaint, comments about HMOs and sort of the problems they cause, but we're waiting for people to complain about them. And the people who are going to complain about them are the people whose home it is. I wonder if we shouldn't be a little more proactive, which that £50,000 might help.
Can I also comment? Because we're on. Being recorded, I'm sometimes a little reluctant to say certain things, but there is for example, just in my ward, we had 5 cannabis factories. Now, that doesn't appear as any concerns of finding out who's behind closed doors. We have also encountered a number of properties. We don't have Article 4 building regulations, certain things are allowed now, you don't have to apply. To convert attics. Last year, 2018, we found 2 houses in one particular road where the attics had been converted to make it 3 stories. which should have had a mandatory licence with a number of people in it. We didn't find that out until, quite by chance, when they applied. It was sold and another landlord took it over and applied to do extra work to make it even bigger. A resident happened to go round to the back of the house just to see what it was like, whether to object because of the, you know, what was being planned, to discover it had been a three-storey. Now, two of those turned up, and there has been, in the last few months, a very unfortunate event, which isn't highlighted anywhere, and I found out by accident. So I think my point on evidence is we cannot rely just on those percentages, and this is... But I do accept that, on the whole, Alison can only go by what's reported. But equally, we don't know what is reported.
No, we don't know what we don't know.
To use my phrase, exactly.
Yes.
And that's my concern.
Thank you.
Yeah. It may seem an odd question, but when rogue landlords are found, what happens? Are they... such as a illegal loft extension, is that made to be put back and they're checked on regular, or
under the 2016 Act, is that's exactly what they should be. And if you're discovered that you are a rogue, the penalties we're able to charge up to £30,000 and keep that money. So Alison's quite right. The licensing itself will cover the paperwork to get the license. But in getting into a place, I mean, there are other management regulations, we should have quite clear guidelines for a Category 1 offence. It's very serious.
Yes.
And at the moment, I don't think we necessarily do anything about it other than, well, we obviously landlords have to put it right. And that's assuming you discover they've got a Category 1. So it's a bit chicken and egg. You've got to find out first.
When you, to clarify the Professor Smith's finding, we're talking now about 2,509 HMOs,
but
we said he found 1,653 that we didn't know about. So were we talking about 853 before?
Well, I think before he actually
identified... So we thought there were 853 before he found the 1,600. So that, I mean, just really does demonstrate that if we don't look for it, we don't find it.
And there's more increasing. I mean, we're still getting applications in, but the trend now is to go for party houses, double the size.
Party house is what?
Well, it's...
I was interpreting it wrongly.
Well, it's... But the trend for landlords is to combine...
Well, combine two semis.
Yes, yes, and do quite big extensions.
I see.
And they're more of a limited company now, and... The 2016 Act, I think Alison will confirm this, the landlord, you cannot have the landlord living abroad and just dealing with it all from afar. They have to have a designated person in this country that would be responsible for that property. So if you have a concern, you know where that person is. And I mean, we've taken years to try and find some of our absent landlords. I mean, I can give you the names. This is why I'm saying I've got various case studies to back up. If we really want evidence, there's evidence there to back up with what we're saying.
So you can assure us, Alison, that this £50,000 we're going to put to good use, that this grant to actually find out whatever else we need to find out.
Yeah, we'll do some further investigations to ask the relevant questions to determine and justify whether we need an additional scheme.
And will you need to bring on extra staff or not?
We'll need extra staff to do that, yes. And I'd just like... In relation to action that we take, obviously the council have their corporate enforcement policy, which is an incremental approach. So we work with people to bring... whatever service it is to rectify the issues that have been raised, and we also have a private sector housing enforcement policy which clearly sets out the civil penalties that we can apply.
Okay, thank you. Andy?
Again, Councillor Roger Paley. Again, Chair, I'd just like to touch on what we talk about when we look at the evidence that we've got, and whilst due respect to Alison, that's all she can talk about, but then the evidence of Professor Smith, there's a huge void there Yes. And just going back to the complaints regarding HMOs, were all these complaints attributed to an HMO that was licensed, that we knew about, on a percentage wise, was it?
No, I think you'll see from the complaints, especially from my service area, where's that on the page? I've got the cabinet report, rather. Paragraph 28, and this details the enforcement action that Strategic and Private Sector Housing have taken. That would be in relation to a licensable HMO. And over those, from 2014 to 2017, we took two lots of action in relation to a licensed HMO. The other four were non-licensed HMOs, and that could be because they didn't meet the category at that point in time, because obviously that's changed. And then for this year to date, we've had one where there was issues in relation to excess cold. So we served an abatement notice, they replaced the boiler, so therefore we carried out the work that's required.
Yeah.
So it's an incremental approach. We work with the landlords, and if they're not in this country, then we'd work with their managing agent, letting agent, to get the works required. But that is the corporate council approach that is then repeated in all the different service areas policies.
So based on what the report you just said, the reports in terms of the complaints, we actually found that these complaints were not registered to an HMO property,
yes,
which we didn't know about.
Yeah.
That's about 150%.
Yeah.
More.
Yeah. Yeah, so we took enforcement action on 59, of which only two were licensed HMOs in that period of time.
Any more?
I think my concern is that at the moment we desperately need more staff doing the work and going into these places. But overcrowding, I mean, again, one of the case studies, there were up to 10 people in that house, and a ceiling had fallen down.
Yeah.
The wiring was, the various signs on the light switches that don't touch this one, don't do that. The landlord agent, I think, was in London. The landlord was abroad. Abandoned cars, when we first started looking at it from the residents group. Place after place, it took 4 years on another property to try and get somebody actually to go and see inside. We couldn't get in, and then one day I knocked on the door and I was invited in and saw what had happened. And the redress scheme, I mean, this isn't part of the enforcement action, but it is still, there are various things that bad landlords do. And the number of Chinese students in that property who said, we've been pointing out all of this for absolutely ages, they never got their money back.
Mm-hmm.
They've never got the money back, and I've actually housed a student as well for a few days, because it wasn't an HMO, an official one. It was a spareroom.com, but the landlord or landlady wasn't living there.
Yeah.
So it's not just the houses themselves, it's what's going on and what we don't know. That's the bit that worries me.
Thank you, Gareth.
Mm.
Thank you, Chair. Councillor Matthew Brooks. So, if we implement a licensing, a discretionary licence, without the evidence, we can be legally challenged.
Yes.
And that's the concern. Are there any other risks associated to it other than that legal challenging?
There's legal challenge either way. With the selective licensing, if it's over 20% of the private rented sector across the borough, even
yep.
if it was in different parts of the borough, we have to get Secretary of State approval.
Okay.
So if we haven't got the evidence to justify it, then that could just get thrown out.
Okay.
So there's a reputational risk there as well, trying to implement something that we haven't got the evidence for.
So just to clarify, who would make that legal challenge against us?
Members of the public could make a legal challenge, because we're charging them a licence fee, and also the Secretary of State could come back and say, well, you can't do it because of this, this and this,
okay.
and go through it. So.
Thank you.
Okay.
Just as a final point, if I may. Certainly Nottingham, way back in 2014, I think it was, could have been 15, before Alison was with us, the landlords there did challenged, and the judge's comment was, I see nothing wrong at all with making sure that properties are safe and well managed, and he overturned that. All I've found in all my research are two challenges. One, I met the head of the private rented sector down in London, I think it was Redgate or Redcar. They had put in for selective licensing. It was turned down at one stage because they wanted to do it borough-wide. They went back 6 months later, and whatever they put in for that, I can't remember if it was additional selective, was approved. Out of these 65, I think there is one in Barnsley that currently is subject to legal challenge on the selective. But additional, we've had the powers since 2004 to actually introduce additional to improve the quality of what's out there so that we know who the landlords and the occupants are. Also the right to rent, whether they should be in this country. So, I mean, there's quite a lot that isn't in the papers tonight that explains so much.
Thank you.
I think there's just one last point I'd like to say. I know Professor Smith has highlighted a number of HMOs that we weren't aware of, but that doesn't mean to say that they're not being managed in an appropriate way. And one thing that the investigation will do is to look at those particular areas that have been highlighted to see if they are being managed and whether there are issues. And I'd just like to, obviously, that is the further research to establish whether we do need an additional licensing scheme. Because additional licensing, I haven't said, is purely for HMOs, so it's purely for houses in multiple occupation, where if you do selective licensing, you're licensing the whole of the private sector.
I did have a couple of questions. I wrote them down and on a pad at home and forgot them.
Oh, well, that's so good, isn't it?
Don't worry.
I've got a laptop.
Sorry.
Okay, so you can't remember them?
No.
So you can't answer them, okay.
Sorry.
Well, okay, let's draw this one to a close. The recommendations were that the Cabinet note the evidence gathered to date and the impact of the implementation of the mandatory licensing scheme. I think I've got to add something to that the evidence is really controversial there's a big dispute between the figures. So how much notice the Cabinet can take about 15% is... Well, they will have to decide that, but it will have to be pointed out to them. Cabinet agree further investigation being undertaken. Well, that is to be amended at the Cabinet, is it not, Councillor Smith?
Well, I'm going back to what's been said already. I was hoping that we would be able to go out to consultation, because consultation can take anything from 4 weeks to 14 weeks, shorter or longer, whichever, because we cannot do any scheme unless we actually consult in the wider field, both landlords and the general public.
So we're in the situation here where the recommendation as it's written is not how you want it to be.
I just feel it's potentially going to hold us up even longer, and I don't see why the two couldn't run together.
Yeah.
A consultation, because it means nothing until people come back. So right. I would have hoped the two ran together, quite frankly.
Well, we have to make that report, because that point to Cabinet as well, I think. And the Cabinet note the accreditation scheme with students will not be taken further. Well, that seems to be in no dispute. It's not being taken forward. They've pulled out of that. But it lean means that we are not getting any complaints from the student houses.
Correct.
Very rarely do they come to us.
Okay. Well,
they're often directed, if you don't mind me saying so, to the bridge, to a solicitor. But very rarely do we have to deal. Certainly, certain things.
Okay.
But there were over 1,000. It quadrupled in the 4 years that I was looking at the information. Not certain things we would have had to tackle, but general complaints. They'd quadrupled.
Okay, thank you very much indeed.
So can I just check then for the notes? Are the group in support and are they happy to accept the recommendations that are in the report?
An improviser making
no,
another
not as they're in the report.
1A, I think. Okay. You want to do 1A. Yeah, make it 1A, do you? Chair.
One.
We have captured notes the evidence gathered today that the impact of the implementation of the government expansion of the mandatory licence of HMO you also made that you weren't satisfied.
Yes, so
we want to add to that
the evidence presented is in dispute.
Yeah.
So that could be made 1A, couldn't it? Yes.
What about second recommendation, Chair?
Second. Yeah. It needs to be 1A, make it 1A.
Okay. And 1B is the Cabinet agreed to further investigations being done.
Do you want a consultation or something, Chair?
Yes.
Yes.
Clarify what the consultation would be on.
Okay. On taking a licensing scheme
selective additional, what area would it cover?
Can I go back again for this 50,000? I want to know. I'm hopping on here, aren't I? To be honest with you, that's not unusual. This 50,000, will the actual officer or whoever will be given this remit will actually gather this evidence for you, Alison, and your department, so that if required, that you as a department will go out to consultation, or are you looking at going out to consultation for this part for licensing?
As it stands, there's insufficient evidence for me to go out to consultation, so therefore we would be open to legal challenge if we went out with what we've got. There's not sufficient there. So to run a consultation along with the investigation in tandem, that doesn't work, because what am I going to go out with consultation on when I haven't got the evidence to take for the establishment of a scheme? The investigation is to work through further research to see if there's enough evidence there then to take a scheme forward.
So as the principal officer, you're advising this committee that we should actually leave this open. Do correct me wrong, Adrian, if I'm overstepping my mark here. You're advising us to leave this open for further investigations?
Yes.
Yeah.
I think you as a committee chair are being asked to consider the recommendation that's in front of you. Councillor Smidovitz, as the lead member, is suggesting that at the cabinet meeting she make an amendment. She may propose an amendment to that recommendation. I think you need some clarity from Councillor Smidovitz what that amended recommendation would be, as to whether you support the recommendation as written or whether you would support Councillor Smidovitz's amended recommendation. But I do think, as Alison has just said, to go out to consultation, I think officers would need some clarity on the evidence base to support the consultation and what exactly would we be consulting on? Would it be additional licensing? Would it be selective licensing? And if it was one or the other, would it cover the whole of the borough? Would it cover Loughborough? Would it cover particular parts of Loughborough?
I totally accept what you're saying, and I mean that had been part of what I had hoped originally this meeting would be discussing. So I actually was going for additional licensing.
Yes.
But there is no reason why, when additional licensing has gone through, that selective could not also be, because it's not just about HMOs, and I quite take that point. There are caravan parks, there are private rented places that also need checking, but a family in a house is more likely to have concerns as opposed to a house of multiple occupation where we've got all sorts of folk gathering. So I was going originally for additional licensing, but many of the places do both, and there's no reason when research is being undertaken.
Well, this is talking about HMOs, this whole point, isn't it?
Yes, very much so.
So we're left in a quandary.
Left in a quandary.
I'm looking at Adrian.
take Adrian's.
There's 1,653 HMOs that need looking at.
Yes.
Right.
And certain areas are a concern. And they've been identified in Professor Smith's report. I would have originally said additional licensing for all HMOs, bearing in mind that the majority of them are in Loughborough. But having said that, we know that they are spreading out to the villages. The detail, the breakdown of how many there are in each village area has been identified.
I think, therefore, we're going to have to say on item one, the Cabinet notes the evidence gathered to date and the impact of the implementation of the Government's expansion mandatory licensing scheme. However, we dispute the figure. There is much too much dispute of the figures to accept them. And then B, Cabinet agreed to further investigations, therefore we can't really dispute that. We agreed to further investigations.
Yes,
and then C, the students, well, that's as it stands.
And it's more than students.
Yes.
It's
yes, but that's what's written
in front of us.
Yeah,
yes.
No, I quite understand.
Thank you all very much. That's a bit harrowing.
Adrian, are we within our rights to do that? Correct.
The summary that as the chair has just explained sounds perfectly reasonable.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, because I'll make the note.
Okay.
Yes,
thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you. Now, item three.
I was hoping that you told me I'd be home by half past seven.
Just sitting in front of town. I need to run it, please.
Well, I said we'd be finished by 9. Right, is everybody here?
Thank you very much.
Item 3 is to consider a report from the Head of Strategic and Private Sector Housing regarding the Council's updated tenancy strategy. And so can I call upon the lead member for housing, please, to introduce the item?
Councillor Paul Mercer, lead member for housing. On this item, the Alice and I see eye to eye, to quote Isaiah. Absolutely. The reason for this document, this is an updated document. The original document was written in a somewhat turgid manner. This is far more user-friendly and easy to understand. The reason we have to produce this document is under the Localism Act 2011, under section 150, we have to prepare and publish a strategy which, quote, sets out matters to which registered providers, that's housing associations, have regard in formatting their policies. In other words, we are telling them what we would like to see their policies to be. And there's four areas that it defines. First is the kinds of tenancies they operate. The second is the circumstances in which they grant those tenancies. The third is where they grant it for a fixed term, the length of those terms, and finally the circumstances in which they'd grant further tenancy at the end. There's no specific time limit on when we need to produce these documents specified in the legislation, except we need to keep it up to date. We also need to consult the RPs in the district, and where we do make minor changes to it, and the recommendations are that it can be modified over its lifetime as legislation changes, we need to publish those changes. We also must make it available. When it was originally, the legislation came out, that was a fixed paper copy that tenants could come in and have a look at the council, but obviously it's something that's now online and far more easy to access. It's also a strategy which it has an influence on our homelessness strategy as a council. We have to take note of this strategy, and every time we make a housing management decision, we should take account of what we've told registered providers. Fortunately, it's not actually legally binding on the registered providers. They can draw up their own policies, but it's basically saying what we would like them to do, and therefore
I would like to commend this report to you. There are one or two minor typos which we'll be tightening up on, and the major glaring error is the photograph of me is now 5 years out of date, so we'll
so
be a new, older, up-to-date photograph and a slightly tighter introduction. But as I say, this document is simply a something we have to do to tell our registered providers how we would like them to, shall we say, behave.
Okay, thank you very
much. Is there anything you can add?
I'm not sure, really. I think you've covered most of it, but I will apologise for the spelling mistakes, because things like that really irritate me, so I'm very sorry for that. And the only other thing to say is that for our own stock, we have to produce a tenancy policy, which will be party to a separate cabinet report, which again landlord service will have to have regard to the tenancy strategy. That's hence why they're not being brought together until it's been approved.
Anybody, any questions?
No.
Only a couple of things that have occurred to me while reading it. What am I going to call it? Affordable home, affordable accommodation. Do we stick to this business of up to 80% of market rent?
For our stock is social housing. Social housing rates, which are set by Target, 45 to 50% of open market rent. The affordable housing is up to 80%, which includes service charges, and is predominantly through funding that the Homes England has provided for a registered provider, because it was part of the conditions that if properties were built with their funding, it had to be up to 80% market rent. Although they do still have obviously stock that is prior to the Homes England 80% market rent model, and that will be lower, and they've got their own money in reserves, which they could still develop social housing, but predominantly it will be under 80%. But the proviso as well, when we're looking at, because we have to give a recommendation if RPs are putting in for a bid, sorry, registered providers, for funding in the borough, and we would make sure that that is within the LHA rate, so local housing allowance rate, to make sure that those people on benefits can afford those rents.
I see, okay. Very good.
Sorry for all the acronyms.
The other one was the fixed term tenancies. That's something we don't do at the moment.
That's some of the registered providers do offer fixed term tenancies, but under the Localism Act since, I think, 2012, I think it's section 154, Alison, is that right? We've been able to, we have the option of fixed term tenancies, but that's something which will be decided upon and outlined when we actually come forward with our own policy document.
So we don't have to perform with another people. There may be less agreement. That's great.
And just in relation to legislation, the Housing and Planning Act 2016 did put in a mandatory request for fixed term tenancies, but the recent Green Paper, the New Deal for Social Housing 2018, there's no intention to make these mandatory, so again they are still voluntary.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, Chair, Councillor Andrew Perry. Reading the report, I think it's a very good report, and you know, we spoke about 80%, 50%, and it's quite clearly what it recognises that affordable rent housing is essential to the delivery of new houses funded by the Homes of England. The cost of these may reach a level where residents of the borough who are on benefits are unable to meet the local of the rent payments, and the council then puts, the council would prefer rent spent social rent level wherever possible, but recognises in order to secure new supply, affordable housing will be delivered. So that has been totally recognised throughout the document.
Yeah.
So I commend the report for recognising that.
Any further comments?
No.
No? Well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Then I think the recommendation must be that the overarching tenancy strategy in relation to the borough be approved, and the head of strategic and private sector housing, also with the cabinet member for housing, be given delegated authority to make amendments in response to future legislative changes. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Now, if you little bits for us. I didn't go to the last, I wasn't at the last meeting, and I wasn't going to go to the last cabinet meeting. The last one I went to was the 15th of October, and the leader thanked me very warmly for the report that we gave, and he was very complimentary on the perception we had shown in, you know, looking into things. So thank you very much for your contribution, and please keep it up. I think it's so important to remember how vital scrutiny is. If you think about how much work we put into reading these reports before they came here and thrashing them out here tonight in detail, Cabinet can't do that. They have far too much to do. So they rely on us a lot to look at the detail. Officers do a great job of reporting to us, but they're reporting an overview. If there's any real little detail that's to be found, the detail is in what is written. So anyway, thank you very much for
Chair,
everything.
Can I reiterate your thanks on I actually went and represented you on the last report, and the same commitments were given to the for the committee to have. Okay. Thank you.
So the committee just happy to note that report then.
Yes.
Okay. Then the next one is to discuss the work programme. Where am I going to find that?
Page 58.
Page 58.
Yeah. There's a shortcut of the books.
I know. That's why I've done it. I know. I'm very impressed.
She's actually short, man.
Stupid as you think.
Yeah, so the committee will see their current work programme, that's Appendix 1. So you've just got your standing items listed on there.
Yes.
Plus there's one item listed for June. And then underneath Appendix 2, the committee has the forthcoming key decisions. So this is the chance where the committee can have a look and see if they want to add anything to the work programme at this point, or if you want to wait until I send out the updated email with all the reports and you have a chance to add them then.
Okay. We'll further forward, the 14th of February. Mm-hmm. Cabinet on the 14th of February wants to seek approval to change the council tax charges for empty homes and to introduce an exemption for care leavers. I think that might be something worth our looking at, because, as you know, if a council home is open, not a council home, any house is empty for 12 months, the owner then starts to pay council tax at a rate of 150%. It's almost like a fine for leaving your house empty.
Yeah.
But the proposal is that it goes up to 200% after April. And maybe we can help talk about that one.
But sometimes keeping the house empty, it's personal, but we've been strung on by a buyer for my dad's house.
Yes.
Over a year, he's been stringing us along, and we've been paying the full whack.
Yeah.
It's not our fault.
No.
The place is empty.
That's the sort of thing I think we want to look at.
Did the committee want to add that to the work programme now?
Yes.
Are
you
agree with
that?
And I can just make a note of that one
there.
Okay.
That may. I'll speak to you afterwards.
Sorry?
I'll speak to you afterwards, Councillor Howard.
Okay.
It's not on Charnwood, though. That's fine then. In that case.
Okay.
It's in Leicestershire.
But again, going on that policy warehouse, I've had one particular one. And they've actually come in because there is. Planning permission going through currently, and the officers have actually been out. You know, we're talking where you can't even access the house because the roof fell in, and working with the planning officers and the council team, that they said, well, there is no charge
because there's
evidence that the planning, once it's submitted, then obviously they put a plan in to say, to make a house livable, these are the schedules when the bathroom and things are.
No, the ones that have been brought to me, they are, and I have two of them, the house is perfectly habitable, but they've left them empty for various reasons.
Yes.
The one of them, somebody died, waiting for probate before it went on the market. Then she bought the house, but after she'd owned it for 3 months, the house had been empty for 12 months. So, there's nothing she could do about it.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much for coming. Let's close the meeting. And
thank you.
Thank you very much. Okay, Chair.
8 o'clock.
Well done.